PTF here just to remind folks that our t-shirts are on sale. We've got three designs. We think they're all really cool. They're over at oldsmokeclothing.com. Go there, hit the partners tab, and you will see the three designs. Pick the ones you want, maybe buy all three, and get them sent to yourselves. Make sure you use our promo code MONEY, which gets you free shipping across the site. There's so much good stuff on there. Oldsmokeclothing.com. Check it out today. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players podcast. This is show number 107. It is Friday, January 17th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker once again ahead of this long MLK Day weekend. Some exciting things going on in racing. We're going to answer a couple of questions today. I just decided that on the fly. And to do that with you, we're going to bring in a man who is still on the planet Texas. And he's got a lot going on these days. We're going to talk to him about some of that, too. Talking about the People's Champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
PTF, what is going on? Yeah, I was sleepy this morning. I, fell asleep, pretty early last night for my standards. I know you go to bed at 7:30. That's how you how you boomers do it. But I think I went to bed at, 9 o'clock, woke up at 6. And then I dropped Austin off at school, and I went to the coffee shop to grab coffee before I came to the library to set up shop. And I had to, lay the seat back and take a little 15-minute cat nap real quick. My head just wasn't right.
But what's going
I'm
on?
I'm good now. I'm ready to run. I just think that it's, I think that I got back from Vegas, and I powered through.
Oh,
and
then there you go. Vegas hangover. Monkey. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I think it jumped on my back, 3 days later. Yeah, so I'm good, though. I'm good.
All right, so lot to pause on there. We're going to start with the boomer thing, which I just need to explain how offensive it is to me as a proper member of Generation X. And, of course, as every Generation Xer knows, there's two really annoying things about being in Gen X. One is that people don't acknowledge our existence to this day. And then the second is we are very clearly sandwiched in between the two most irritating generations ever, the wasteful, hypocritical, generally annoying baby boomers, of which you accuse me of being one. But even worse than them is the snotty, not as clever as they think they are, don't really work very hard millennials like yourself, JK. So that's why it irritates me so much.
I don't know. You mentioned clever, but you mentioned clever. You're questioning my cleverness, and every time I throw in the boomer, that we get a damn monologue out of you. So I think I'm pretty clever.
Fair enough. I did the long spiel the other day off air about it, and so I needed to replicate it to some way on the show. So there you go. I've managed to, looking at our demographics, there's a giant chunk who are with me and laughing along, and then, you know, I offended the older and younger people, but, you know, that's bound to happen sometimes. We're gonna leave it in there, JK, as we move on. We've got a show that's going to be posting soon. I mentioned the off-air rant. That was when we were recording the NHC preview show, in a way, through the lens of Stats Race Lens that Matt Vagvolgi and Scott Coles were kind enough to join us for. That's going to be going up soon. Tell people about what we were doing on there and how'd you think it went?
Yeah, that was really fun. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people are, you know, look, this market has continued to kind of evolve from handicapping tools with different programs, right? You know, I think everyone kind of started the DRF formulator. That was the first change that everyone was willing to embrace. And then Timeform US came along, and some other things with circles and squares that came along. And then Stats came along. And for whatever reason, I think Stats kind of got a weird rap. But I think it's probably because initially Stats was marketed in a way that most horse players couldn't embrace. I think it was maybe marketed as a replacement. And accepting it as a replacement is hard to swallow because we're so conditioned to what we've already got. But accepting it as a supplement, it's almost necessary. And that's how I've treated it, as a supplement to what I do normally. Because you can set up so many automated things that in this day and age of trying to find great value and try to find great opportunities, and in an event like the NHC, where you're forced to look at more races than you probably look at in a week, and you're forced to do that in one day almost, it really, really helps kind of with that heavy load of trying to figure out what races to spend your time in. You know, you feel a little cheated at the NHC. You know, I think a lot of horse players are 30 minutes to an hour per race types, and you can't do that at the NHC. There's too many races. So you have to find a way to kind of narrow it down. And Scott Coles and Matt Valvolgi who've had the most success that I can think of using that tool in the NHC, were giving some of their ideas and their thoughts on how they use it. And I thought it was really good. I think I tweeted yesterday, you need to be following Matt Valvolgi. I was taking notes as he was talking, and I've got a list of things I got to do based on some of his ideas. So, I was proud of the show. I thought it was really good. I think it'll be helpful to people, kind of letting them see the power that stats has.
I will be posting it as a pod when they get me the MP3 of it. Until then, and actually, even when you have it as a pod, it's kind of cool to watch with the visuals to get a bit more acquainted with the stats interface. It's up on YouTube. I tweeted that link. I assume you tweeted that link as well. Maybe that's the easiest thing for folks to find it. You know what? I'll go ahead and pin it to my @loomsboldly Twitter profile here at some point too, so folks can find and watch the video. The pod will be coming soon. And one thing that I didn't mention in the audio host fail was that you can get a significant discount on weekly, monthly, annual plans when you use our promo code STATSITM. So we encourage folks to take advantage of that as well.
I haven't had a chance, and I really just wanted to point it out, because it's gonna really piss him off, but I haven't listened yet. But how was Sean on show 106?
Oh, he was great. It's a really cool conversation, because we get into it on a lot of different levels than we do with a lot of the guests who are maybe super successful horse players, but they have so much else going on in their lives. Getting the perspective of somebody grinding and betting every day, and particularly how that changes the game, and his thoughts on ticket construction and preservation of capital and the state of the game today. As you would expect from Sean, there was a lot of great stuff. I had a page full of questions after an hour and 15. I was planning on it being an hour. We went off on some interesting tangents. We'll have to have him back for a part two, honestly. And I think that chapter in the book might be the one that folks who are thinking about trying to find ways to do this for a living might find the most useful of all. So you dig it, man. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah, I will. I'm just gonna punish Sean by, I'm just gonna keep asking him, like, hey, how did the show go? Because eventually he's gonna curse at me and tell me to listen to it.
I'm surprised he hasn't already. Maybe he's onto your act. We'll have to see about that. A little bit later, we're going to talk about this quartet of races that are going to be happening at Fairgrounds this weekend. I realize maybe we missed a trick to have, missed an opportunity to have Frank McGoey on, but we'll get him on to talk. Ooh, to talk.
Let's
about
save. Some, we'll yeah. save him. He's too powerful for the LeConte. He's more of a risen star Louisiana Derby guy.
Well, I think that's fair, and one of our most popular guests, and he'll be back for those for sure. Had a couple questions I wanted to get to from the audience before we go there. I like this one. What do you consider the major tournaments for the year to be beyond the BCBC, Pegasus, and the NHC, asks Ali Dar. Is there a tournament equivalent of graded events? Does it depend on the prize pool? Hashtag ask ITM. I'll let you take a rip at that one first.
Well, I think some of the ones that you named are the majors because of the quality of racing that takes place and or the prize pool, right? A dollar amount. So Pegasus and Breeders' Cup and NHC for all those reasons. Some must attends. I think that the next time they become a major for you, it's more about the experience, right? More about the racetrack, the racing, the city that it's in, and the prestige of the event in terms of how long it's been around. One that the first one that pops in my head is a major would be the Grade One Gamble that Jim Goodman puts on at Keeneland, a phenomenal event in a phenomenal city at a phenomenal racetrack. So that's one for me I won't miss that one. The other one, I would say the Del Mar contest, the 2-day event that happens in the summer. It usually happens Bing Crosby weekend, so it doesn't interfere too much with what goes on at Saratoga. I believe it's Jim Dandy weekend. It would be its counterpart at Saratoga. So last year I was able to make it out, and that's always a fun one. All the contest players show up for that, and you know it's Del Mar, and it works out really good. So those two are definitely good ones. I think anytime you can get north of the border to Toronto, I think that's a very important one. And then the last one I'll throw in there is the pick your prize at Monmouth. I think is another good one that you want to consider. And look, the Belmont contest as well, I think is probably another one that's important on the calendar.
That's a good list and very sponsor heavy, which I love, JK. Look at you being a company man. But in all seriousness, pick your prize is huge. We're going to do something fun down there this year. Did I send you the date on that yet? Do you know if you're going to be able to be around?
You did send it to me. It's like June something, right?
Yes. It's usually the week after Belmont or before Belmont.
It's
typically the week before. And I think that's the case again this year, because we've seen contest players come and stay for the come to the Monmouth contest, stay the week, and then go to the Belmont contest.
That sounds like a very Canadian thing to do, something like Ray Arsenal would do.
I could see that. I could see Ray making that journey. Saturday, May 30th, it looks like. So, yes, that's the spot on the calendar. I think they have another contest on the 31st at Monmouth. So that's – and the other fun thing about that is we're going to do an event that night, some sort of meet and greet and drinks and just generally getting a chance to hang out, deconstruct the contest. That's a really fun one. And if you're somebody who's interested in NHC, I can't think of a better contest to qualify than Monmouth's Pick Your Prize. I'll just add a few more. Santa Anita for the Ultimate Betting Challenge, that's one we've done before and is great. In the past, Santa Anita have done their Preakness Challenge. Of course, that was a World Horse Players Tour event 2 years ago. That was a ton of fun. I always enjoy that one. But in terms of majors, Keeneland Spring and Fall, and then the one other I'll mention is I think that four-star Dave contest has the potential to continue to grow and be really big. The idea of a Saturday contest at Saratoga. We got to wait and see what goes on. I've heard some rumors about the Kentucky Derby contest, about the Preakness contest this year. We got to see if and where those end up happening to go along with your idea of the Belmont contest as a major. Anyway, there's tons of good stuff going on.
And then, yeah, I think that since we're throwing in bonuses, I think maybe a very under the radar, I don't think anyone's going to be offended if I say it's by no means a major, but it's a contest that I love and one that anytime I can make it happen, I do. And that's the Hawthorne contest. So usually the bankroll is low. There's no entry fee and you can play whatever you want. I think Eric Bywick famously qualified there by showing up with three races left and firing away. So that's a fun one too. And it's Chicago's typically a really easy place to get to no matter where you live. You probably have a direct flight there. It's in the middle of the world. The guys at Hawthorne are great. So it's another one that it's lower bankroll, it's a little bit easier to get into. So it's a nice little value.
Yeah. It's far from a major, but it's a must, I'd say, if you're interested in qualifying for the NHC, as we've talked about at length on the show in the past, we're big believers. Well, it's just a stated fact that we don't even have to be believers. It's just obvious that the value of an NHC seat, you do a lot better in equity terms qualifying at a live tournament like that Hawthorne one, especially where the seats are added, or the Monmouth contest, than you do in the online events. I get it. Some people don't have the opportunity to travel. And if you really want to go to the NHC, well, there you go. You got to play online. But if you're looking at this at all with that your hat on of trying to figure out what a dollar's worth and get into and caring about expected value and things like that, those live contests are the best ways to qualify for an event like the NHC. I'm looking forward to heading out there in a couple of weeks' time. That was one of the things I was referring to with how busy you've been, JK. Sounds like your preparations are in full force at this point after Matt Vagvolgi and Scott Cole's little fire under your butt the other day.
No, I wouldn't say full force. I got 3 weeks. No, I mean, I definitely have some things I want to do. You know, Matt's conversation about the True Odds I thought was really cool. I think there's some really fun ideas you can do with that to kind of help you narrow some ideas. When I was coming up with an example, I did an Oaklawn Speed example that came back pretty powerful, that I was really just using that as an example for the podcast we were doing. So it kind of got my brain going in some other directions for some other opportunities. I'm going to try to drum up some turf stuff. You know, I think that living your life with absolutes is, and not, you know, having rules for yourself is fine, but living in a world of black and white and not operating in the gray can be troublesome, and at least being willing to take a look at the gray. And the last 2 years, I haven't played any turf races, and I know you kind of think that I'm missing some opportunities a little bit. I don't have any regret, but I do want to open my eyes back up to some possibilities. I've done some things with turf racing that have kind of made it a little bit more digestible for me. And so I want to set up some stat stuff with turf racing to kind of help me focus on certain turf races to try to find those opportunities that could work.
I think that's a good idea. You mentioned very quickly that'll intrigue some people about the true odds function in Stats Racelens, part of their proprietary algorithm. But what interests me the most about it is this idea of doing all this back testing and trying to find not just angles, but I'd call them, I guess they're technically within the program referred to as angles, but some of them are just these interesting situations, and I won't reveal them here. I'll make you listen to the other show, but Matt in particular goes over a couple of opportunities where that algorithm can lead you, if nothing else, to be fishing in the right pond and hopefully to get some nice priced winners as well.
I'm not looking for fish. I'm looking for pond. That's all I want. I just want to know which pond I'm supposed to fish in, and then I'm going to use my fishing tricks in those ponds. It's just hard to identify which pond you're supposed to be in when there's 70 of them.
Yep.
You know? It's tough.
More, right? There's so many.
I think there's like 7 tracks, 10 races a day. That was my 70. Guess.
Yeah, that's a good guess. But I feel it's so dizzying. It feels like more, but I think for once JK might have tried math and succeeded. Actually, the next question is also NHC related, funny enough. It's like we will do an NHC preview show, but this is sort of a de facto NHC preview show. How much real money betting on average is done during the NHC? Everyone there is competing for the $800,000 top prize, but are there a lot of people betting through the windows over the weekend? I would have to say that it depends, but I've not been overwhelmed by the amount of cash betting I see at the NHC. Tournaments in general, I know for a fact, promote cash betting in a big way, except for a very, very small subset of players who you might say, oh, contests are great. I just do this now. I don't bet at the windows. Those are clearly players who, you know, it's a good decision for them probably, but weren't having success at the windows, and the contests were scratching the itch for them. But that, I'm telling you, that I'd put that at 15%. Most people bet cash. However, I think the NHC, as overwhelming as it is, I think that number does go down for that specific event. I've never looked at the handle numbers. JK, you as a member of the Players Committee, maybe you have a perspective on this. How much do people bet at the NHC? Do you bet cash during the NHC? What's your overview of this one?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. This might be controversial, but I'm shocked and sometimes disappointed at the inability for successful contest players to daily play themselves out of a wet paper sack.
Explain what you mean by that. I'm not sure everybody's going to get that.
It's just like this old coaching saying that when you say about bad coaches, they couldn't coach themselves out of a wet paper sack. No,
That part was intuitive. I just mean like, what do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, I know some really successful tournament players that almost scoffed. I was scoffed at before for like playing a pick four during a contest. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? You know, like, what? I was like, geez, really?
This has to be somebody in that 15% subset who was saying that.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, so I think there's a very small amount of people. Now, I will say this, is that if we're, you know, in full disclosure, I think that, like, you know, Treasure Island was never embraced the impact that the NHC had on their bottom line. And I think part of that reason is that although it's illegal, a lot of horse players are not willing to walk away from their rebate to play at Treasure Island where they could possibly get, rewards that might not be worth much to them. And so I wonder how much was actually bet through the window. You have to actually get up, walk all the way up to that window, navigate people and tables, and you've got 100 other things going on. So I think that maybe through the windows is probably less than the host casino would like for you to be playing through the windows. But I think a lot of people are playing. At least the two tables I sit at, dudes are firing still.
Interesting.
Still well, betting.
You are with an interesting, you're with the subset at the other extreme, that's for sure. But yeah, that's good to know and good to hear. And I take your point. I mean, we are big believers in supporting the room when we go to a place and get great hospitality. And maybe again at Bally's, it will feel that way. I have to say, by the end of Treasure Island, I wasn't really feeling the love for Treasure Island. Garrett Skiba's famous story about the armed guard at the buffet might be a slight bit of exaggeration, but not all that much. And I guess that changes my vibe anyway when it comes to feeling an obligation to support the room. What do you think?
I mean, and here's one thing that I think is very interesting, and I shared this with Michelle Ravencraft, and we were talking about the potential move prior to them making it, is like the cool thing about Bally's is they're a Caesars property. So that's Bally's, Cromwell, Paris, Caesars. And then there's Caesars like all over the world in different locations. So those rewards are actually significantly more valuable than the one-off Treasure Island rewards. Treasure Island, I can't even think of a partnering casino that your rewards at Treasure Island work for, and I'm not trying to knock Treasure Island. They were gracious hosts for a long time, but I can go to Treasure Island on a Wednesday and I would imagine I can get a room for $79.99. And I'm not trying to be, so it's like, it's not really worth a lot. Now, if I go through the window and I'm firing away and suddenly I want to go to Caesars for Super Bowl and I call up my casino host and they're not going to yell at me and give me a two carols for the Super Bowl, then suddenly that's worth more to me to then put my money through that window. That makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And I think it's a good point. So you personally do bet cash during the NHC?
Heck yeah. I'm not going to handicap all those races and not. And actually it's a great way that I've learned to play a horse I really want to play that I probably shouldn't play in the contest.
Oh, that's
so if I see a horse, it's like 3-1, then I can play some doubles with that horse, or I can bet the horse to win, or I can play a pick five and single that horse, and I can get that. I mean, I can still have that satisfaction of whatever, but I'm not wasting a bullet in the contest. So, I definitely did. It also it helps me sit on my hands sometimes.
In contest terms. Not sitting on your hands helps you sit on your hands in contest terms.
Exactly. Yeah, because it just gives me some action. I got something going on. I can, there's a lot of times where you'll look through the races and you're not, the first race is at 9 a.m., but your first play is not till like 11:30. So you got 2.5 hours. So I'll play the early pick five at Gulfstream just to kind of, get your beak wet and just kind of have something going on. So, I definitely play during the contest.
One more NHC question, then we're going to segue to this very specific question about the Saudi Cup, specific and open-ended. But we like those. It's a podcast. But back to the NHC. Has the idea ever been discussed of making the mythical money that is wagered into real money? I feel like even that would have a not insignificant impact on handle and just be like a nice way for the NHC to contribute to the wider industry, not just as the marketing vehicle, which it certainly is, but to actually like pump some money through the windows. In aggregate, I think it would add up.
Yes. Paul Matisse and I have had this conversation before. Keith Chamblin has also had this conversation before, is something that the NHC and the NTRA would be interested in doing. It's a very heavy lift in terms of regulations through Vegas. They don't allow live money contests, so you got to overcome that first.
Oh, geez.
Now you can always move the contest, but I think a lot of people enjoy going to Vegas, so we'll pause there and then. The situation is then that you'd have to change the payout structure because the money, the quote unquote $3,500 or $3,300 or $5,000 or whatever you want to call the equivalence of the seat for an NHC, for the NHC, the value of an NHC seat, you'd have to convert that to real money. But then if you're going to let people walk away with that real money, there has to be a way to fuel the prize pool for the prizes to be as big as they are. I think you then wouldn't pay top 10%. You'd probably just pay top 5% because you think that if you make the top 10%, you're going to make about the same amount of money. So you'd have to rework the entire contest in a pretty heavy way. And I do think it's something that's been talked about, been considered. I don't think it's something that's like about to happen, but that's kind of the long answer.
It's a good answer.
Not really answering the question.
No, it's a good answer. It's not what I was exactly asking, though. I was just talking about keeping it $2, you know, you're making these $2 win place bets, but instead of that, just have that money. Just have the $2 win place times a jillion go through the windows. And so for that, I was thinking all you'd need was to figure out a way to factor into the cost of the seat and or get a sponsor to sponsor the initial bankroll you'd need for whatever that is, $2 win place bets over the, you know.
Yeah, it'd be $86,000 is how much that would churn.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's not nothing, right?
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, we're talking about a $12,000 profit for someone, right? And that you know, because the Vegas would be taking it, so it's really not $84,000 seems like a lot.
Yeah, but it doesn't move the needle. Maybe
it doesn't move the needle, and the problems that it would cause. Yeah. If you're gonna do it, you got to do it where it's $20 win place in real money, and you take that $3,500 seat and you turn it into that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's also an interesting idea. This is great because we didn't prep for this, obviously. Yeah, but I like this real life illustration of there's these ideas that seem so easy, and then you hear some of the real life reasons in terms of, you know, the regulation and these other things that make it, you know, people are thinking about things and trying to do things, and you have to pick your battles at the end of the day. And I can see why, after hearing the complexity of it, that this isn't a battle that has been chosen. I still think it'd be a really nice gesture and is something that's worth trying to maybe continue to push down the line, especially with that adjustment you just suggested, JK, of making it, you know, then obviously you have to come up with the 10 times as much money, but it just seems like something that it feels like the right thing to do to me, regardless of the complexity. But anyway, we can talk about that off air or at another time. Let's move along to this question about the Saudi Cup. We had an international listener looking to get our off-the-cuff opinions on the top USA contenders who are going to be pointed to the race. Any sort of thought, a little bit like buy, sell, hold, I guess, this game, JK. Let's look at the market here for the Saudi Cup. And the current favorites are Maximum Security and McKinsey. Wouldn't mind a little capsule thought from you of what you think about Maximum Security at 7-4 to win the Saudi Cup.
He's pretty good. He's a horse I continuously want to try to beat, but he's continuously beat me. I don't think I want him at 7-4. I don't think there's any reason to take a horse at 7-4 who I can think of has missed three races in his life.
Right. Oh, that's a great point.
He missed the Pennsylvania Derby, the Travers, and the Breeders' Cup.
Yep.
So that's a problem for me. Yeah.
I wouldn't be in a hurry to lay it either. I'll throw that in. What about McKinsey?
No, because he could run off the screen, right?
Yeah, he's so talented. What about
We've seen what happens when you let a 3-year-old turn into a 4-year-old at Frosted, right?
Yes, there is a chance the best is yet to come from him. McKinsey at 9-4 also does not excite me. Have you heard anything from your man, B Squared, about how McKinsey's doing?
No, I haven't. I'm sure he'll be ready to run. Baffert's the guy that justified to win a triple crown without running as a 2-year-old, and also trained American Pharoah up to the Breeders' Cup Classic. So I don't think there'll be a problem having McKinsey ready. He's an older horse who I would understand. He always trains well. He knows how to do his job, and so I don't see that as being a problem. But I'm not interested in betting that at 9-4. What's Gift Box?
Let's see what Gift Box is listed as here in the betting. He is listed at 16-1. What do you think about that?
I mean, you know, that's a play that you can make. I think a lot of time with future bets, you know, I think if you look at them more, treat them more like poker chips in a tournament. Not so much like this is money I'm trying to win, but this is a tactic and a weapon in this battle that I'm in. Because if you can get Gift Box 16-1 and he's in the gate, now you're sitting on a bunch of equity where you can then play other horses. You know what I'm saying? So I think there's something to that.
Let's talk about Midnight Bisou at 4-1. She's so tough. She's so cool. We're at 9 furlongs here, so we're in her wheelhouse distance-wise. seems like a short price for a big ask, but I mean, gosh, she's so cool. I wouldn't put it past her, especially not running well. What about you?
She's like the best horse in the last 10 years that I just never just gets me going. Right. I think that she's still she's best at a mile and a 16th or shorter. I think her run is dulled a little bit, and she's going to be chasing real racehorses, you know, Maximum Security, Gift Box, McKenzie. It's a little bit different running those horses down than running down a late at a mile and an eight, you know, no offense to a late, but those other three horses that I named are better than a late. So I just think it's a different ball game.
Spun to Run at 8-1. What about that?
You know, his best two performances came at a mile. Last time he ran into to Maximum Security. Maximum Security gave him the Matumbo not today finger. So I don't think so. Cool horse. I don't think he's a fluky horse by any means. I think he's a really talented horse that'll have a really big year, and a horse that I'd love in like the Met Mile or something a little bit down the line, but I don't know about the Saudi Cup for him.
Yeah, 8-1, too short to me, and the distance might prove to be a little bit too far, but a cool horse for sure. Higher Power listed in the betting at 12-1. Where are you with him at this point? Did he end up running third in the Classic?
Yeah, ask Benny Southstreet, he'll tell you. He's a cool horse. And he had a really bad trip, and all. And I joke. I just like to poke at Benny, but he had a really weird trip. So no, I don't need him here. I feel like whatever you can just bet him on the day and get it. If all those other horses show up.
What happened between you two? Because at this point now you're poking back at him. When I was egging him on when he was on the podcast the last time, he like made me pause the tape. He's like, no, man, I don't want to say anything about JK. I think I really made him upset. Like, what is the, did you like call him crying at some point?
No, Benny and I have a great relationship. It started off as hate and then it turned into love, and it's always been love. There was one situation. You know how men are when they were, you know, guys, they poke at each other. And there was one time after a contest where he poked at my decision-making and I was like, what did you want me to do? Whatever. And then he thought I was offended. I kind of was, but I wasn't mad. And then he, you know, it was all good. We're not a problem. I just like poking at him.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll get him back poking at you. Cause I don't like to be the only one.
Oh, don't you worry. He's coming. He's coming. He'll be back in no time.
I got a few shots in at you on this week's Red Board Rewind. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that, because it was a very rare instance where I got to talk about two races where I was totally right and you were wrong, which I enjoyed very much. And I tried to downplay the fact that in the first instance, anyway, I was very much helped by the bias. But in the second, I just felt really good about the pick. Did you check it out?
No, I haven't listened to that one yet. I got to listen to Sean first. He's more important to me than you.
That's very sensible thinking, I have to say. But yeah, there's some good stuff up on the network. We're going to get back on a regular schedule. Some people texted me about In the Ring. It just didn't work out. We tried hard this week to get a show going, but between the sale and everything, we'll be back next week. We got to have Gabby Gaudette on, don't you think, JK? Talk about
it. Did you see that? That was so cool.
Yeah, explain to the listeners who might not have seen.
Yeah, the first female to announce at the Keeneland sale, you know, doing the, you know, I don't know if I could do it. I'd probably giggle the whole time. Here we go. We got to hit 4, 7, 8, strapping son of American Pharaoh. You know, so I saw a little clip of it on Twitter.
Machine.
She did a great job. Yeah, we got to get her on to talk about that. That's really cool. And you know, look, I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm patting you on the back, Pete. But when you go to inthemoneypodcast.com and you scroll through, it's pretty surreal. I mean, it's the who's who in this industry. Chris Felica and Mike Smith, and Michael McCarthy, and Craig Burnick and Andy Serling. It's pretty cool that all these people. It's really fun.
We've had a good, we've got a great team over here. And then we've got this, this weird thing that some of these important people in the industry seem to like us, but we don't question it. We just, we turn on the tape and we do what we can before we leave the Saudi Cup completely. We're on a very long tangent here, but I do want to loop back to the question, because there is a horse in here who we've spent, actually two more horses I'll ask you about, because we've spent a lot of time talking about Mr. Money, currently listed in the betting at 14-1, and Tacitus, also listed at 14-1. I have a Tacitus thought. I want to hear your thoughts on both these runners first.
Yeah, I mean, I wish Tacitus would have ran in the Breeders' Cup. I think that he would have been interesting. But I also like the fact he's out all this time off. And,
agreed.
And I'd imagine Bill Mott's going to work on some of his antics and get him going in the right direction. You know, Tacitus is the type of horse that instead of 14-1 in the Saudi Cup, I'd want, 40-1 on him to win the Breeders' Cup Classic next year. That's kind of where I would rather put my, if I'm going to tie my money up on a future wager, that's the one that's where I'd want to put it. I don't think 14-1 is good enough.
I don't think it's great either. I don't hate it, but it's not great. But I do think, I can tell myself a story, and that story is, this is a horse who had a lot of boy in him. And the thing about a horse that has a lot of boy in him, in the hands of a trainer like Bill Mott, given time, is that there's a chance he could come back a man. And I think about Honor Code as a great example to me of a horse who fit that bill. The difference between Honor Code, when we saw him early in his career, when he flashed terrific talent and had some signature moments, but then when he came back all racehorse, that's what it's going to take for Tacitus to have an impact in races like this. I don't want to bet on it at 14-1. I also, again, wouldn't want to lay it. I do think this is a horse who I'm still not giving up on him, but I'm just like, I want to be a Tacitus fanboy at this point. I don't need to bet at potentially an underlaid number. We'll see how the race shapes up. I could see betting him for the race closer to, depending on what everything looks like. And then Mr. Money, a horse that we've talked a lot about on the show. What do you expect from him at 4?
It just feels like you can get better than 14, or at the worst case, you're getting 12 on the day. So just wait. I think it's a good horse. Makes a ton of sense. I'm excited to see some of these 3-year-olds turn 4. We don't always get to see that. They usually get whisked away. So
that's right.
Looking forward to seeing horses like him come back and compete at 4. So
it's an interesting,
maybe that's, yeah, it is really. I mean, really interesting. I'd imagine McKenzie will stick around the entire year, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So I mean, I like the horse. It's not that I don't like him. It's just that I feel like I can get that on the day.
I mean, and that's the case with a lot of future bets. There's one of the best weapons we have. We talked about this with Sean the other day in the interview you'll listen to soon about we have a weapon, which is simply no forced bets. You can hold every single one of these. It doesn't make for the most interesting podcast conversation, but as a horse player, sometimes that is the best role. One horse I'm really looking forward to seeing, just a thought that popped in my head as we move on into 2020, is Performer for Shug. That's another horse I feel like just could keep getting better and better. I think even it's obviously lousy as a fan to lose Omaha Beach to his next career, but there's still plenty of interesting stuff going on as the calendar turns. All right, how long have we been talking? We've been talking long enough that I think we should turn our attention to Fairgrounds. JK, you planning on betting these races?
I am planning on betting these races. This is kind of like when it really ramps up. Obviously, we had the Sham already, but it always feels like LeCompte weekend is when it's like, all right, you're going to get a Derby prep every weekend until May. So enjoy. And I feel like this is like when it really starts to hit us.
Yeah, things are going to start to pick up, and we'll be covering pretty much all the Triple Crown preps and a lot of other graded races. We decided to focus completely on Fairgrounds on this show. We've got some interesting state bred action at Gulfstream and at Santa Anita, and we will do the Naira Betts late pick 5 on that show. You can check that one out. That'll be in the queue shortly. So we're going to start off here. There's a couple of X factors before we get into the sequence. One is weather. It doesn't look great in terms of what's happening down there. So we're going to have to keep our eye on that. And the other is you have a lot of cross entries. So keep that in mind as well as we're going through these races. But let's start off with the Grade 3 Louisiana, JK. You want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
Yeah, I can hit it. Yeah, there is. Like you mentioned, there is a lot of cross entries. I think there's 6 of these 8 horses are entered on the turf. And I guess the reasoning behind that is, and I always like to look at the reasoning for these things because I think they can lead to handicapping ideas later, is it feels like these 6 horses probably want to run on the turf. But if it comes off the turf and you're going to run on the dirt, you'd rather run in a grade three than a non-graded stake. If you're going to run on the dirt, you might as well run in a grade three.
That's interesting. Some of them do seem dirt. Some of them do seem dirt meant, though. But we'll let's go through it. Who do you like?
Like the top, my top pick here is Silver Dust. Why would Silver Dust enter in the turf race? You know what I mean?
It's weird. I don't. To be perfectly honest, I don't understand it. But I mean, the horse just fits so well on the dirt too.
He's done this twice. He did it. He did it last year in the same situation. He entered in the. In the Colonial and ran in the Louisiana, and then a couple months later he entered in the Munez but ran in the New Orleans. So this is like a Silver Dust thing. I don't know if it's a good luck charm. You tell him he's running on the grass and he gets all fired up, and then you just throw him on the dirt and he runs well. Look, I just think this race is kind of, this doesn't really have a lot of speed. There's no one in here to me that's a world beater. My boy Jack's burned more money than anyone I can think of. There's a guy named Stacy's Furniture. He's like the bootleg version of Mattress Mac. He used to always burn money. He used to burn money in the Dallas Fort Worth area. But anyway,
some local flavor.
So yeah. But Silver Dust, I just feels like he's going to end up getting a good trip. He's tactical. He's forward. Gunnet was one that had my attention, but he just doesn't seem good enough, to beat these types. And so, I thought Silver Dust was a simple one here. You also have to expect that this field is going to scratch down a little bit. You're not going to get eight. So it's another reason I want someone tactical that's going to get a good trip. Doesn't feel like a race that's going to fall apart. So that's where I landed. And I envision, depending on the scratches, playing the late pick four, I would try to single Silver Dust to try to gather some equity.
I hear that. And if Silver Dust goes here, Silver Dust would be my top pick. If Silver Dust is not here, I think Gunnet would become my top pick because, I mean, I think he would really look to be loose and lonely. But even if both Silver Dust and Gunnet are here, this looks to me like a spot where the two speeds will find a way to have it between them. You really already made the Silver Dust case. But I will just say with Gunnet that I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit more here. He was bet so hard into the teeth of a monster in Warrior's Charge last time. And really, you know, no shame getting beat by him, especially with Warrior's Charge having the tactical advantage in that spot. I just wouldn't be shocked if Gunnet is a horse who is maybe ready to run Gunnet's best race. If you throw in a pace edge with no Silver Dust in here, I think that could be good enough. Even with Silver Dust, I'm going to take a long look at him, but I hear your point. If they're both here, from an equity point of view in the pick four, it might make sense to pick the one you like best and single, and for me, that would be Silver Dust. Do you have another thought on this one?
Yeah, just real quick. I think the thing you talked about being bent into the teeth of it. I remember that race. You know, obviously was watching
our friends at 10 Strike.
With Warrior's Charge in there. There was no one else in the race that could beat Warrior's Charge, and Warrior's Charge was coming off of a very long break. So he was the only other horse you could bet, and he was probably, if you didn't know that we knew that Warrior's Charge is doing really well, I could see how someone could lean Gunnet, you know, having a race under his belt prior to that, you know, being Aspies and having aggressive Ricardo in a short field and kind of sticking it to him. And in fact, you know, Gunnet headed Warrior's Charge in that race, and Warrior's Charge dug in. So Warrior's Charge would be the favorite and the pick in here.
Oh, God,
but
yes.
We'll have to wait. We'll have to wait to bet him, I would imagine, when Oakland opens.
Yes, I think there are some plans in the works. I'm sure we'll get more on that. When Oaklawn starts, we'll be having, hopefully, Clay and Marshall from 10 Strike on to talk about everything that those guys have cooking. All right, that's it for the Louisiana. Tricky race to analyze, not knowing the full composition of the field, but hopefully we gave some ideas in there that might help you some way, shape, or form. Next up, the Colonel E.R. Bradley Handicap, the turf race that a lot of these are cross-entered into. Stop me if you've heard this one, JK, but Mike Maker looks pretty interesting to me off the claim. Parlor isn't far behind the best of these when it comes to the numbers, and Maker's put four works in since the last. This big full field might ensure a pace to run at, and the horse is a little tactical anyway, which could help with the post. I like Parlor in this spot. Hopefully we get something close to that 10-1. Might be tricky, though, with all the cross entries.
You're right. I like Parlor. So, I mean, I want the two Maker horses in here. I feel like this race is going to fall apart. I'll let you pick Parlor. I'll pick Space Mountain. Here's why I think it's going to fall apart, and then here's why I'll go and I'll explain my Space Mountain pick. The best horse in the race, without a doubt, it's not even close, is Mr. Misunderstood. He's won 3 times at Fairgrounds. He's won some nice races, but he's drawn outside. So Flo's got a couple of choices here. He can take back to try to tuck in, but then he's going to have to move. Either way, he's going to have to either move early or blah, blah. He's going to break this race apart based on how poorly drawn he is. At some point, he's going to have to move. He can't just wait to the last second. And so I feel like he's going to have to, he doesn't want to go 3 wide on both turns or 4 wide on both turns. So I feel like he's going to have to move early on the backside or on the turn. So that's why I think it's going to fall apart. And I like Space Mountain because he feels like the type, especially with Corey Lannery, that's going to break from the 5. It's going to go to the fence and is going to wait until the last second to come out. He's got that long stretch at Fairgrounds. And because Mr. Misunderstood moved early, broke the race apart, Space Mountain will come rolling down the middle of the track after saving all of that ground, and that's where I ended up landing.
It's interesting. Maker actually has 3 in here if you include, which you, there's no reason why you wouldn't include Temple in the 8-hole. What if the scenario you just described, I was thinking, if my boy Jack goes here, if this race holds together and the pace is what we expect it to be, could my boy Jack get a piece in this spot?
Yeah, I just look at him like a takeout reducer just because he's so over mean.
We're so mean to poor my boy Jack. He will not be any takeout reducer here, I don't think. I think the morning line is 12, probably not all that. But, I mean, aren't the days of this horse just being – I mean, look, the last 2 races he was 12 and 10. I mean, granted, probably should have been longer. But
he was 7th and 5th that day. I mean, I just think he's always over bet.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. I feel bad for – I mean, the but Derby Keith was Stormo, ridiculous.
Keith Storm was 0-13 at the meet. He's 0-15 for the year. So it's not like he's going all that well. So there's a chance he's ignored.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see what the betting is. I just, for 3rd and 4th, I'm not going to go crazy here. But if your race design is correct, this horse, to me, kind of needs to be in the super, saving ground and finishing.
Fair enough.
All right, let's talk about the Silver Bullet Day as we go on to the Oaks Trail here momentarily, return to the races of Finite, who I was very surprised was not in the Oaks betting. This is one who I was thinking of as an Oaks filly and has looked really, really good on the track, should get a beautiful trip in here. Is this a patented JK single and move on?
Look, I like Finite. She makes a lot of sense. I think we even had this conversation after she won the Goldenrod. It's like, I think I actually said, we'll just have to see who she shows up against. There's a possibility I would single her. There's a possibility I would try to beat her. It just depends.
That's right.
This feels like one of those situations where she surely can win. She's the most accomplished. She's the fastest. But I learned after getting my face beat in these Derby and Oaks preps, that just because you know their name doesn't mean they're going to win.
Well, for sure.
Oh, yeah, well, someone should have told me that when I was a younger horse player. I just felt like I knew them, and they were so good when they were 2 that they were going to obviously continue to be good when they were 3. And I didn't think about all the 3-year-olds who we didn't see when they were 2, so they never had a chance to be whatever. And so I just didn't, I just used to be like, oh, Finite, she's much better than these. She won the Goldenrod. She hasn't lost in the last 3 starts. And then you get snapped by some horse that you're like, oh, I guess I forgot about that.
Who's going to jump up and beat her if somebody is? I was thinking it was a single and move on, frankly. So I'm glad to hear you. I'm glad to hear the other perspective. I just thought it looks like she's going to be able to have the speed to control. Nice trip. Either on the lead or stalking outside. I see it in my head, and I see it going well for Finite here. But who? And I take your point, though, about the new 3-year-olds stepping up and horses who have more scope for improvement than ones that ran at 2. But who will that be?
Well, I think you want to start at the bottom of PPs with these types and work your way up. And Ursula was – there's 2 that caught my attention, Ursula being one of them. So Ursula, she debuts in October at Keeneland going 6.5. She's 9-1 that day for Stidham. And, she kind of has a little bit of a trip, she's a Tappet out of a English bred horse. You got to assume there's stamina there. Then she comes back and she wins very impressively in November sprinting. And then she's got the bad race in the slop. Now she's going to get, well, she could get a sloppy racetrack too, but she's going to get two turns. And maybe this is what she wanted to do the entire time. She just hasn't gotten a chance to do it yet. So this is the type that could really jump up and do well in this spot. Stidham is 33% for the year so far. He's won 6 races and 18 starts. So he's going in the right direction. So she's one that I think could jump up and turn the tables. And then Portrait. I just remember hearing in the Pocahontas that Portrait was one of Brad's favorite 2-year-olds, and that, you know, she really had a lot of talent and she didn't run all that well that day, but that was only her 3rd start. And you know, Brad was still learning about her. Sean Bridgemahan might've learned something about her that day. And so she's one that I think could jump up and turn the tables on a horse like Finite, who is good and deserves the credit she's getting, but she's not some freaky thing that we just know for sure she's going to train on and go ahead and put the lilies over her shoulders now.
Bridgemahan actually is going to be riding number 2 past the plate this time around, but Florent Giroux picking up the mount there probably doesn't make you too upset. You make a compelling case, especially for Ursula, who is going to be a big price, I think. For the record, Anaba, the dam sire, was a sprinter, but I know what you're saying. There's still, I don't know the dam, Debonair, but presumptively there's still enough stamina anyway to get the mile and 70 yards of this race. And you trust Stidham to put one like this in the right place to see if she deserves her spot on the Oaks Trail. Anything else on the button up this one before we move it along to the feature?
Yeah, this is the type of race where ticket construction becomes very important, you know? So you have to decide what you want to do here. I mean, I think I would probably treat this as I would pick one of those 2 horses that I mentioned, like Ursula or Portrait, and I would make them co-A's with Finite. So I want to still, you know, I want to take the chance to beat Finite, although I think Finite's the most likely winner. And then I would use one of the other one that I didn't use as a single B horse. I think that's kind of how I would play the race.
I like it. And you feel like you have prices enough elsewhere that you can get away with using that many in a race like this and not losing too much equity?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so? So you
might. I don't think I'm gonna lose equity. Yeah, I mean, I was answering your question, but I answered it like you asked the other way. My bad.
That's okay. I was confused. I thought you were being cheeky. We don't mind when you're cheeky. We like cheeky JK over in these parts. But yeah, all right. Let's talk about the LeCompte. Put in a plug for you wrote a piece about this, I believe, for your new gig over at Sportsline. To plug that for the folks who didn't hear it last week.
Yeah, it's CBS Sports Line is I think they have like a little, they have everything. They have like baseball, basketball, UFC, anything you can bet on. They give some analysis and picks and whatnot. And so I think it's like $9 a month or something, and you can get a lot of other stuff. So I think there's other racing guys too. I think maybe Hank Goldberg maybe does something too.
Cool.
Also. So, I wrote this up with our buddy Gene Menez, who actually hung out with us in Vegas. Did I tell you that?
No, that's great. What was he? Yeah, he was out there.
No, he's writing a piece. He actually lives in Austin, but he was writing a piece.
Oh, right, of course.
A profile on Hank Goldberg. So he was out there, and so he came and hung out, went to dinner with us after the LSU game. So
I'd love to read that, and we'll send it around on social for people. Though I hope Gene took the advice and started catching up on his podcast. You know, he got he kind of got taken down to Chinatown by Matt Scarlotta back on the Christmas quiz.
He's got to step his game up.
See if he can reclaim his title here in the presumptive rematch in 12 months time.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think he'll rally. I believe in him.
All right, let's talk LeCompte for real this time. The artist formerly known as Noose makes his return to the races, talking, of course, about Scabbard. It does look like there's going to be plenty of pace for him to run into. I'll be honest, I did my homework. I looked at the race, but I'm not, I just wasn't feeling super committed to a pick here, JK. Maybe I'll figure something out while you're talking.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's the same theme as the last race. You know, in these early Triple Crown races, you go to the PPs and find the horses whose names you recognize and start there and say, and ask yourself, can I beat this horse? you know, Scabbard is a name I recognize. He was a buzz horse for people to play in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He ran second to Dennis's Moment with that kind of quote-unquote funny trip. He was good at Saratoga. So, and he was good, and he obviously was good when he broke his maiden at Churchill. So he's one that, that people are going to play, people are going to gravitate towards, and he's one that I'm going to try to beat. I think there's an opportunity to beat him here. I'm going to use, but by using a favorite defensively and using other horses, that's still the same idea as trying to beat them, in my opinion. Not totally beat them, but you're building equity, or you're reducing your equity on them by playing other horses, which that's the definition. You're putting more equity in other places. So, Mr. Monomoy is interesting. That horse is going to be overbet, being a half the Monomoy girl and having that there and drawn down inside. You have to work out a perfect trip from down in there. Can definitely get involved, but not one that I love. And so I ended up landing on two horses. One of them's outposted. So Shusha Shake Me Up is one. That's a really hard word to name to say, by the way. Shusha Shake Me Up.
Yeah, you did a great job on that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's very tough. That was kind of my top pick in here. I'm going to use the 9 Silver State as well, but Shake Me Up was interesting because was bet on debut for Keith DeSormo, who wins at 7% with first-time starters. This is one of those Buff Bradley Divisadero things where, like, he ran through that bad stat and was able to win on debut going 7 furlongs, which is very difficult to win going first time out. Then he runs into the sloppy racetrack going 6, doesn't run as well. Now he's stretching to the 2 turns. He's drawn outside in the clear. I think if he runs the race that he ran on debut, he's going to be extremely tough in this spot. So that was the one that I was going to lead on top. Lynn's Map is interesting. I just think the draw is a little bit tricky. That horse is one that drawn the 5 might be the pick. But drawn out there is going to just be another horse that I'll be using underneath.
It's a very good case, and I'm glad I wasn't feeling this race, and your idea of trying to cleverly spread and maybe try to beat Scabbard is appealing to me. You made the point about Shusha Shake Me Up and running through a stat or an angle. That's something else I brought up on Red Board Rewind, looking back at last weekend, talking about Jolie Olympica, who you and I both hated the situation for, ran through it, ended up winning easily, exuding class in the process. I declared her a potential grade 1 winner, not something I often do with West Coast-based turf horses. Am I being too optimistic about her?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that when you can run through a stat, it's powerful. You know, and we talk about Shusha Shake Me Up with Keith DeSormo. Like I said, 7% first-time starters in his career. 15% second-time starters. He doubles his percentage second time out. Obviously this isn't the second time, but you understand what I'm saying, that they're going to improve as they go on.
Well, there's something I love about the second race, actually. Sloppy, whatever, you know, I'm just making a note of that. But when you have a situation reversal, and what I mean by that is here was a horse trying to come from off the pace in a race coded blue time form throughout. And now, in this big field, with a fast pace projected, is going to have plenty to run into. So the deck was stacked against Shusha Shake Me Up last time. Maybe going to be stacked in Shusha Shake Me Up's favor this time. I also love that you've got horses with speed on the outside. I feel like that could be a recipe for heating things up. I like it. You've convinced me to definitely make at least a little bit of an investment to try to be alive to something to get paid here with that one. And a couple
I got
to
be honest, I really just want this horse to win so that he can get on the Derby trail and Travis has to call his name.
It's not a tongue twister. I think once you have it, I think the hard thing, and we'll ask Travis this at some point, but I think the hard thing is to resist the temptation to, you could go pretty darn over the top as a race caller with a horse called Shusha Shake Me Up. You know what I'm saying?
But I feel like it makes you rush through it. Like, I feel silly when I say it, Shusha Shake Me Up. You know, because you don't say like, Sycamore Run. You know, yeah. You say Sycamore Run. Yeah. So this one, you say Shusha Shake Me Up.
Yeah, you sound ridiculous if you say Sha Sha Shake Me Up. Like, that doesn't work. We'll have to see
how our man, Mr. Dooley, decides to handle things down there on Saturday. Hopefully there'll be a big run to call for getting our pick four tickets home. Any final thoughts, JK, before we wrap this and move it along to the Naira show?
I'm going to make you, I'm going to put you out on a limb here. You should call Travis after you get off and ask him just to say, shake me up, and then put it at the end of the show, just how he does.
Oh my goodness. I'll consider it. If he picks up, we'll do it. If not, it'll be quiet at the end of the show and we'll get him soon to do the very same gag. Travis is the greatest. He's got a good sense of humor and would probably allow for such a thing if we can get him. But I don't want to hold. The problem is I don't want to hold the show too long. You understand, I'm sure. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the In the Money Players podcast. I'll thank you. JK will thank our sponsors, including our friends at Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, 10 Strike Racing, and Stats Race Lens. I got to remember to pin that tweet if you want to watch the video. The stats show will be posted soon. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos. I can do it right.
Shaking me up.
So it's not a shusha. You're good with the sha. You want to go sha.
I think it's a sha, but I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's sha. And I was always told that if you're uncertain about a name, speak it like you are, and everybody will believe you. So I think it's sha, shake me up. It just feels so, and when I do it, I always feel like I'm rushing, like shusha, shake me up. Shusha, shake me up. That's definitely possible.
Is it a fun one to call?
No, those types of names are not fun. They really could have made it brutal if they got rid of the first H and Sasha's shake me up. That would have been awful.
PTF here, just to remind folks that our t-shirts are on sale. We've got three designs. We think they're all really cool. They're over at oldsmokeclothing.com. Go there, hit the partners tab, and you will see the three designs. Pick the ones you want, maybe buy all three, and get them sent to yourselves. Make sure you use our promo code MONEY, which gets you free shipping across the site. There's so much good stuff on there. Oldsmokeclothing.com. Check it out today.